Shavua Tov. We're continuing this week in a very important discussion, part of the we'll call the Aguna crisis. Last week, which was the second installment, we distributed a particular question that I had sent to the grandson of Rav Avadya Yosef, which speaks about a situation of borderline personality disorder. I'm glad to report that the psychiatrist who was quoted is here tonight. In case there are any questions, we can ask him. I discovered, someone brought to my desk just in the last 2 weeks, a ksav yad of mine. It even has a date on it. Elul Tavshin Ayin Aleph. We're talking about over 2 years ago. A follow-up of this letter, which somehow didn't make it into the typescript. This is my own scroll, which makes a second reference to the same tshuva that's quoted in the second paragraph of Moshe Feinstein, Chelik Aleph Siman Pei. There the question was, there he had been, when I wrote this letter, they said in the original case of the tshuva, that the person had been put into a hospital for mentally unstable individuals in Ferry Point, that was an army base, and here it was not. But I looked again, and it said he was only put in the hospital after the marriage. So therefore, it must be that Rav Moshe held that the expert doctor said that before the marriage, he was so ill that it was impossible for him for a woman to stay married with it to him. It's considered to be Kiddushei Tos, if she didn't know that, even though he was not hospitalized until afterwards. And there, again, this is also from my Ksav Yad, I quoted from a Moshe, which part of it is quoted over here, part not, and I read you what I said. A man who was Pikeach, who is he's of sound mind, but he is a very angry person because he has bad midos. And he does silly things, and the Shulchan Aruch calls him a mishtateh. The source of mishtateh is shota, that's the root of the word. But when I refer to a person who's a clinical situation, he's acting like a shota. In that kind of situation, it's possible for the woman to see to it he doesn't get angry. But if he does something which is not in control of a situation, he has a psychiatric disease, in that kind of a situation, you would force him to divorce her if he got sick after the wedding. As we spoke about at length last time, any case in which you would force him to divorce her if the situation arose after the wedding, if it arose before the wedding and she didn't know about it, then the marriage is null. This is what I added. Unfortunately, was omitted from this piece of paper. Should have been put on it. It was part of a second letter I had written to the same rabbi. Unfortunately, as I told you last time, his grandfather would not sign on to the dispensation. Fine. Let us now turn our attention to today's discussion, which is a situation in which the problem was not apparent before the wedding. We had assumed last time that the only time you can consider something a mistake if it's a mistake in fact. If you buy a stock and it goes down afterwards, you can't say, had I known it was going to go down, I wouldn't have bought it. That's absurd. It's a question of what it is at the time that you buy it, right? Same thing over here. However, there was a certain Bezdin that expanded the concept of Kiddushei Tos, which we said last time is itself a matter of controversy, to situations in which there was no apparent problem at the time of the wedding. And here you have in the English part of what we gave out tonight, I'm going to read it. According to this new Bezdin, and this is a quotation, a Beit Din may recognize other intolerable defects as grounds for Kiddushei Ta'ut, including psychological abuse, adultery, sexual molestation, abandonment, criminal activity, substance abuse, and sadism. Parentheses. the withholding of a get may be viewed as indicating a sadistic nature. Close parentheses, close quote. The new Betin continues this line of thought by adding that, quote, a Betin, applying a psychoanalytic concept of human nature, may hold that the seeds of such deviant behavior are present in the groom at the inception of the marriage, though they may not yet have expressed themselves in overt behavior, end quote. This being the case, just put two and two together. A man beats his wife, so Kiddush Etos. He couldn't have beat his wife before he married her, she wasn't his wife yet. Can't be your wife, she's not your wife. So
it's a little too easy.
But they say the fact that he beats her afterwards indicates that he's a sadist. And his sadism was there before. It was just hidden. So this is a quotation. So the next paragraph is a response by our Bez in the Bez of America, signed by, I believe, four Abundam way back in 1998 when this came back. This has come up over 15 years ago. And I'll just read it to you. We'll read it together. This approach is erroneous because, one, improper behavior by a party in a marriage, such as psychological abuse, adultery, sexual molestation, etc., cannot be assumed to have been present earlier in the form of seeds. How do you know? Two, potential psychological tendencies do not create tos, especially since they may remain undeveloped. In other words, granted the potential was there at the beginning, we all have potential to do terrible things. Maybe it will never come to pass. Three, many persons marry even though they are well aware of their spouse's emotional and psychological problems. We gave four examples last time, in Igros Moshe, where he felt that no one would want to marry such a person. Nobody. We gave a slight, almost no one in a regular situation. What were the four, if you recall? Someone who was impotent, someone who was homosexual, someone who was psychiatrically impaired, this fellow from the Ferry Point case, and someone who's in the church. So Rav Moshe assumed no one wanted to marry such people. But there are many women, or men for that matter, who marry even though they know about the spouse has emotional and psychological problems. Four, many women continue in the marriages even after the aberrant behavior of their husbands become manifest. Therefore, even if a woman really did not know about her husband's psychological problem, assuming that one can be demonstrated before the marriage, there is no categorical assumption that she would not have married him had she been aware of the problem. Consider, by contrast, the argument that emerges from the logic of this new best, quote, if withholding a get is sadism, and its latent seeds obviate the marriage, then whenever a get is withheld, the woman was never married. That's what emerges. This approach taken in the ad, that such a woman is not married, is completely contradicted by the extensive Talmudic and rabbinic discussion of how to procure a get from a man who wrongfully withholds it. This is our letter from 1998, which I felt we should have some English in our handout. This, of course, was prompted by an earlier ad, which is quoted here verbatim, and in turn prompted a whole attack by others who were trying to support this new Betin to whom you refer. And, you know, that's life. You say something, you're subject to criticism, which is fair. People have right to critique whatever is written and signed, and I take it in that way. But nonetheless, all these years later, I believe that what was written is correct, and therefore it's a very dangerous precedent for a Bet Din to extend the idea of nullifying marriages to solve the Aguna problems in situations beyond the specific cases which are found, for example, in the Igros Moshe and other comparable authorities, is a very dangerous precedent, which I believe should not be followed. Okay, this is my English citation. Let's get down to the lumdus. Is there any possibility of nullifying a marriage on the grounds that there is a latent problem of which no one is aware at the time of the marriage? So if you read this short two paragraphs, the answer should be no. If it's latent, it's latent. So therefore, there's nothing to do about it. It wasn't around at the time. How can it be? It's no mistake in fact. The facts were known. Nobody in the world knew those facts. If you were duped, no one knew these facts. How can you consider it to be an invalid marriage? That's what emerges so far. However, let's read together source number one. Source number one.
Obviously she didn't know about it, but in the argument, had I known about it, I would not have married him. So obviously it was hidden.
Any person, man or woman, who says, had I known about A, B, or C, I would not have married this fellow or this woman, is not credible unless it rises to the level, as per last time's discussion, right, so that no one wanted to marry the person.
Those four are not exclusive.
I don't want to say they're exclusive. They're almost exclusive. That's because such a level, which is very hard to reach. Let me go. Sources 1, 2, 3, and 4 are all taken from the same piece, which you all have on your email. It was emailed to you before the very earliest year. Something called Kol Tzvi, which came out just Tov Shin Ayin Gimel, which has a piece which I wrote. And the title of the piece, which is found in this sefer, is Kiddush Etos. Lo and behold, that's exactly the title. Kiddush Etos. And for those who want to look it up, it starts on page Aleph. It happens to be the first piece in this periodical, this annual journal, and extends all the way to page Chaf. It's 20 pages. I'm not saying you have to read it, it's all on your email. We're going to have a few brief excerpts to prove a point. It's quoting a Ramban, Beis Amid Beis, it's in Masechet Yevamos. This whole book is about Yevamos. Quote, this is a direct quote of the Ramban. Shazeh Hadin, Tzaras Islandis. Important to understand. The first mission of Yevamos was about Tzaras. Doesn't mean we call it Yiddish Tzaras. Tzaras means co-wives. A Tzara. So there it says, if there was a woman who was an islandess, so her Tzara is not subject to Yibam Chalitz. I'm not going into that detail now, because the marriage with the islandess was certainly at best questionable. Says the Ramban something amazing.
What's the islandess?
A woman who was not developed as a female. She's, but fundamentally so, not just a... Binose Kitana. It's referring to a case where a man married a woman and she was still a Kitana. She was under the age of 12. Alva Gedola, but she's more than the age of 12. Lav Mekachtos. It's incredible. He marries an islandess and all of a sudden we say it's not considered to be a Mekachtos. The marriage is valid. Why? Utricha get. If she wants to get out, she requires a get. Why? Mipnei shahaya lo livdok. He should have done his due diligence. Presumably, once she had reached the age of 12, and she was not formed as a normal female, he could have found it out. And since he didn't do his due diligence, didn't try to find out, means he didn't care enough. And therefore, the marriage is valid. This, ladies and gentlemen, knocks a nail into the coffin of all those things. People say this is no good. This they never married. What do you mean? An islandess is one of the most serious possible shortcomings. She's not really a full woman, and nonetheless, he says, "Well, he should have found out. Should have been bodek. Should have found out. He didn't bother. So therefore, the marriage is valid." That we're not going to go into right now. It's an implicit waving, because he should have done his due diligence. He didn't bother finding. Didn't bother trying to find out. So writes the Ramban. Now, that's amazing, but that's not even the main point I want to talk about right now. We'll come to that a little bit later. Wait a minute. One minute. What do you see from this? You see from here. Let's read my own writing over here in source number one, line 3. I'm also quoting from a toast which I didn't put on the text. It's a little bit before that. Those want to look it up in this article. As we said at the beginning of tonight, we don't take into account blemishes which will develop in the future. Not that the stock went down doesn't make the purchase of the stock invalid. Something that goes wrong with the man or woman later on after the marriage was not invalidate the marriage. Mikomakam nonetheless. If when the blemish will become clear later on, Hadavar Barur, It's clear that it predates the sale or predates the marriage. Virak the lo hayanikar, it wasn't recognizable. The nidon kitaus, it's still considered to be a mistake. And he gives an example from buying and selling. You buy wine, and later on it turns into vinegar. Barur libisof, it's clear from the beginning. Shebishas hamekach asidolios chometz, the wine was no good. It's going to turn to vinegar anytime soon. Even though it wasn't noticeable at the time, still no sale. And here is my point. Nafkimimimimachalas nefesh chamura, a serious psychiatric illness. The im yesh din kidushay tos, which we'll see, which we spoke about last time and a little bit earlier today, we'll get to it. Hadin kain, af im lo hayon nikar b'shas kidushin. Here I seem to be agreeing with this bet din that we just criticized. But I have an important caveat, critical caveat, which comes out now. Kol shebarur libisof shemishas hakidushin asida hamachala lispateach. The only time we say that something which develops after the marriage is serious enough to render the marriage null and void is if it's clear that what we don't know now, a latent condition, must come out later. No choice, no alternative. The example here, islandness. An islandness is some unfortunate problem which is there from birth, but when the girl is young, so she looks like any other girl. Once the girl reaches puberty, and she's not developing as a normal female, then it becomes clear that she has a condition which is from birth. That, the Ramban says, is Kiddush Etos. Contrast that with all these examples we gave over here, on the top of the page, which, not necessarily, the person can have impulses, he can have problems, but it's not 100% guarantee that those problems are going to lead to the terrible issues which come after the wedding. And therefore, we cannot apply the principle of Kiddush Etos in these circumstances. I consulted my expert about borderline personality disorder we spoke about last week, and I was told that the experts in psychiatric experts say it's there from birth, and it come out right away. I think it comes out at teenage years, 20s, whatever we discussed, but it was there from the beginning, and it had to come out. There's no way the person say, I don't want it, I'm going to do tshuva. Can't do tshuva. You're not... It's not within your ability to think straight. And therefore, for that reason, I wanted to argue, as I did in that letter which you have, we gave out last time, and you have some you have in front of you again today, that the marriage should be nullified. They didn't accept it, but I want to give you my analysis, my reasoning for such a situation, even if it would not have been apparent. In the case that we were dealing with, it was apparent before the wedding. But even if it would not have been, if it's such a serious problem, and it's inevitable that's going to come out, if that's what the psychiatrists say, then according to this Ramban, and there's an earlier Tosfos and Yavamis on that base, we have a possibility of nullifying the marriage even in such a circumstance. Now, after the shiur last week, I was approached by one of the people in attendance who's not here today, so I will not mention the particular name of the person, who says, you know, she's aware of someone in the Holy Land who is very attached to the thought of Rav Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, and therefore is bound by his reasonings. What is his reasoning? So we had mentioned last time the concept of Tav L'meisav Tandum L'meisav Armulum, Isha B'kol Du Nichala, that a woman will settle, quote, for anything. And it's a quotation of the Gemara Masechta Ksubos. And a particular rabbi, the same rabbi who, this 20 plus years later, founded this Bet Din, was quoted at that time as saying, this is in the 70s, that is just a matter of sociology, now that women are financially independent, and etc., more educated, no longer applies. This elicited a very sharp response by my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha. And as luck would have it, it was reprinted this week. Yeah, no, there's no coincidences. I got it faxed to me yesterday. I got a cool Rebbe. Did you see Ami magazine? I said, I don't get Ami magazine. Well, on page 62, I believe it is, of Ami magazine, dated December 4th, 2013, one tape is 5774. That's this week. There's a citation, a whole long shiur given in June 1975 by Rav Soloveitchik. I'm going to read you this very small piece, one paragraph. We must not tamper with the chazakos, because Chazal, what they spoke about, rests not on transient psychological behavioral patterns, but upon permanent ontological principles rooted in the very depth of the human personality, in the metaphysical human personality, which is as changeless as the heavens above, such as Tavla Mesav, this one. Has nothing to do...
What is ontological?
You have to be a psychiatrist. Go to ask a philosophy professor. Has absolutely nothing... Means from being, from the sort of being.
No, can you explain Tavla Mesav?
Okay. It is better to live as two bodies together than to live as a widow. That's their translation. Has not absolutely nothing to do with the social and political status of women in antiquity. It's based on a verse in Bereishis, she quotes. It is a metaphysical curse rooted in the feminine personality. She suffers incomparably more than the male who is in solitude. This will never change. Kimei hashamayim al ha'aretz. Yes?
Well, I think in fact it has changed because there's so many unmarried women today. And I think you've even said yourself, I don't know, I'm going to ask you if you've maybe said this, that in the past, you know, there wasn't all this problem with people waiting so long to get married, but now that women are more independent, they can afford to be on their own and have their own apartments and so forth, this is part of the
process. I did quote, you are quoting me accurately. Let me just finish the quote. The conclusion of the quote is, that's a terrible thing. It's a terrible byproduct of women's financial independence that they're therefore not getting married. There's a whole single scene.
But it may be terrible, but it's true. So
it is true. It is true.
Make that decision.
It is true.
Women have
it is true. It is true. So let me temper what my Rebbe said, if I may. What he said, I'll temper what he said. He said it very hot. He was very, very hot. I'm trying to cool it down a little bit. I believe what the Rebbe said is true. I argue with the Rebbe. What he said is true. However, the fact that it's true does not mean it's identical now to what it was then. Because it may be true that the solitude of a woman is worse than that of a man, and that's going to be Kimei HaShemayim Al HaOretz. But there could be other considerations as well. To be in solitude as well as to be penniless and friendless is not as bad, I mean that's worse than being in solitude but neither penniless nor friendless. That's a statement of fact, which is not disagree with my Rebbe's position. Let me compromise with you. No, I'm sorry?
Can you reconcile much easier?
Yeah.
The deferring marriage and deferring being together with somebody else for 10 years more because of career, school, etc. At the end of the day, they do not want to be alone.
Correct.
So it's just a little later on.
Okay, whatever it may be. Let me tell you that notwithstanding this statement of the Rebbe, I have, and it's not the time to go into the Talmudic analysis in this same piece. Those who want to look it up, feel free to do so. My chiddush, if I may, something new, is that the application of Isha b'kol d'hunicha, that the woman will settle for anyone, quote unquote, because of this principle of Tavla Mesav, which is found in the Talmud in Mesechta Ksubis. This is the Mesechta Ksubis. It's also in Kedusha, but this analysis is in Mesechta Ksubis. Now, it's important to understand that the case that's being described is this Ksubis Ayin Heyam and Aleph. Ihi b'choldu nichala. She'll settle. She'll tavla mesav. If you look carefully in the Gemara there, on that daf, and look in the Shita Mekubetz on that daf, what emerges is the man had no faults at all. No faults. His fault was he was a nadron. He took the darim, but he went to a chacham who uprooted these nadarim retroactively. Chacham okel lemafreya. Turns out there was really nothing. There was no fault in the first place. It's only some small side point that if you marry a particular person and you get divorced, you can no longer marry his or her relatives. That's a side point. So with respect to the question of rendering the relatives of the spouse ineligible, there the Gemara says this idea, that a woman would be inclined to go through with the marriage anyway, even though she renders his relatives disqualified, as opposed to the man. But if there's a real mum, a real blemish in the man, nowhere in the Talmud Bavli, to my understanding, does it ever say that this whole idea of tavla mesav yields a b'chol du nichalu. So therefore I can admit completely to my Rebbe's concept and still say, if it was a real mum, the whole concept of tavla mesav was never said. That's my chiddush, page vav in this piece, page 6 out of the 20. However, going back to what was told to me last week after the shiur, since this individual who lives in the land of Israel is bound by my Rav Soloveitchik's pronouncement, she developed a new inyan, a new concept. And as was put to me in English last time, a person cannot be expected to live with a snake. That's right. That's a Talmudic concept. A person cannot live with a snake. What does that mean? The expression in the original Hebrew is Ein Adam Dar Im Nachash B'Kfifa Achas. You can't live with a snake in one room. It's impossible. Source 2 begins with that. Source 2, which was the thing we spoke about last week. That's the Igros Moshe Simen Pei. A Gemara in Subas Ayin Zayin Amin Aleph. The Ba'ofen She'ein Adam Dar Im Nachash B'Kfifa Achas Kofin Lahotzi. You will force the man to divorce his wife if we can call him a snake. And the word snake in America means anyone's a snake. You guys, a little sneaky guy's a snake. The word snake in Chazal is much more limited. But if you qualify to be in the category of a snake, then we can force you to divorce your wife. When I say force you, it's a very limited number of cases. Unfortunately, as was shown to me just this morning, there was a tremendous uproar in the Holy Land this week, where a person was beat up by Chassidim in Brooklyn, and the woman went to go marry someone in Israel, and apparently, I found out later that for 2 months this is going on, and the rabbis are saying that this marriage was, the get was no get, it was a forced get illicitly, and there were tremendous protests in Bnei Brak on Thursday night. Police were there, and they got married anyway. Here's a woman who got married, and there are hundreds of people, and maybe dozens of rabbanim signed that she is a married woman, because the get from her first husband came only after the Hasidic thugs beat him up. It was apparently in the emergency room when he authorized the get to be given. Now you understand that it's not a good thing to do. Leave out the FBI. It's just not a good thing to do unless you have transparency. So have a bezin that's willing to say, here, this is a psak, this man rises to the level of a snake, or some other, whatever that means in particular detail, and it's legitimate, from a halachic perspective, to force him to give his wife a get. Here are the facts, here is the psak, now you can judge for yourself, it's right or wrong. In this particular case, to the best of my knowledge, there were no such transparent facts that were confirmed by the rabbinic establishment, and therefore, it's attributed to either vigilantism or incompetent rabbinical advice.
Ken Rubens is what they probably did.
But I don't know what happened. I just don't know.
But supposedly the Rabbanut was behind this hit.
Really? Yeah. I haven't. I only saw. I did not hear.
That's the official position, that the Rabbanut, I think, was behind.
I did not see that in the one page that I got this morning. You give me more pages for tomorrow?
Try it.
Okay.
But I just realized that any person can claim later, you know what? I was forced in some way.
Correct.
And we don't listen to him.
Don't listen to him at all. But what happens if he brings his emergency room records from the hospital? He was beat up on that particular day, time?
I was beat up, and I'm afraid I'm going to get beat up again, so
that's a pretty credible statement. That's a pretty credible statement, if you ask me.
But transparency still doesn't criminal or penal laws.
I'm not discussing that. I pulled out my first shiur. I said it clearly. I'm saying it again every time. I'm not here to allow anyone to break any laws of the United States of America. Period. Period. Any laws. Okay? So as general a statement I can possibly make. These people weren't so concerned about that. Okay, fine. Let's go on. Let's go on. So therefore, as this is what I'm in paragraph one of source two is exactly what I quoted from my own scroll that was brought up. This is the same comment going back to Ramosha. There's a Gemara Yevamos. They never made a takana de rabbanon that it should be marriage for a shota. Why? Ain't Adam Darum Nochash Bekfifa. Someone who's a cheresh, right? Deaf, mute, maybe not be able to marry by Torah law. The rabbi said, let him get married. But not, they didn't make it by a shota because it's not going to be a good marriage. You can't live with such an individual. Therefore, Rav Moshe Paskin, as we mentioned last time, he's not a shota mamish that walks around naked in the street and he sleeps in the cemetery and whatever you give him he loses. That's the case of Gemara Chagiga. He's not on that level. Doesn't matter. Once he rises to the level, you can't live with him. That kind of a snake. And she didn't know about it. She's not married. Now, that's only if what he's doing is shalom idas, because he's mentally ill. V'yev shalafaiso. You can't reason with him. Someone who's mentally ill, you can't reason with such a person. Mash engin v'pikeach. Someone who has intelligence, he's not mentally ill. Sha'osem ma'ase shtus v'kas midas. In other words, the word mishtat is used by the Shulchan Aruch. Bramashita doesn't mean. It means he, out of his anger, he does things which someone who would be mentally compromised would do. He's not compromised at all. He just wants to get his way. So to get his way, beats her up. What happens, just take the most extreme case. He beats her up, he thinks he's beating up a tomato. Right? He's delusional. He thinks he's hitting a tomato. And he's hitting his wife. So he can't reason with such a person. Can't reason with him. That's what's called, he may not be a shota in the sense, he doesn't walk around naked, doesn't sleep in the cemetery, but he has no grasp of reality, at least at that point in time. Therefore, no woman could live with such a man. It's very important. And here's the next point that I made in that letter that I just read you. Over the Rav Moshe's next paragraph. He was not in the hospital until after the marriage. But, it was clear from before, based upon the doctors, even before the marriage, that he had this terrible illness. And therefore, it's a mum gadol, and therefore the marriage is no marriage. And here's what I said before, based upon the Ramban. I said that in source number one. Even if he hadn't appeared, siman eshoda b'pol, before the marriage, as long as the doctors testify that this illness that came into fruition after the marriage was there before the marriage and had to come out, the marriage is null and void. Why? The last four lines of this column. Anan sadi. We are witnesses. No one wants to marry a man who at any moment can cross the border of the borderline personality disorder and become psychotic. It's not in his hands or her hands to stop it. Who's sitting here tonight? The gam machlas hafrog nafshis kvulis, borderline personality disorder, bichlal zeh. The yesh v'niyas psichoti, he can become psychotic. Kolomar she'ein lo achiza b'mitzius, doesn't know what's going on in the real world. V'zeh shota shalomidas of the Ramosha. That's what I wanted to say, that this fellow, his marriage is no marriage. That's what I wrote to the rabbis in Israel. They didn't listen to me. What could I do? I try my best. I still think I'm right. But I can't go against the rabbinical establishment. They think that I'm not right. Okay. Let me now tell you another story. This story, yes.
Is there any other mental illness that you would equate at this level?
Any mental illness that my psychiatrists tell me rises to the level that a woman, since we're talking about Kiddushos in that order, in that direction, the woman, we would assume that no woman would want to live with a man who can at any moment turn violent or you fill in the blank, whatever it may happen to be. She wouldn't want to do it. Now, the truth is, and let's be honest over here, if he becomes violent, not because of psychiatric reasons, but because of the others, he's a Russia, he's a bad person, and in order to show his boss, he hits her, I cannot make that categorical statement. Can I make it? And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Because I know women who marry men that they know are wife beaters. Either because they know it from the first marriage, they have evidence. I'll be different. I'll calm them down. Or catch this case. They know it from themselves. Wait a minute. How can they beat her up if at the time of the marriage he couldn't have beaten his wife because they weren't married yet? I have the following case. It came to my bezdin.
Beat her up on a date?
No. They were married secularly. They were married civilly, and he beat in her bill of particulars to show what a bad guy he is. She quotes, it's going in the court papers, on or about a certain day, which is after the civil marriage, before the halachic marriage, he beat me up. Lady, so what'd you marry him for? Halachically. The answer is, there are people who can confirm this fact, that they get married knowing it, they stay married knowing it. It's a terrible thing, because they'll fix them, they'll change them, they'll make them. But that only applies if you can talk to them. If it's not a mental illness. If it's a mental illness, you can't reason with them. I think that's what I'm told from them. You can reason a little bit. But at the end of the day, it's not the same. Just want to make that caveat. But you are correct. For reason, any kind of level, you just can't reason with them. You can't deal with them. And no one would want to live with such a person. In my opinion, it rises to the level of Kiddush Hashem. That's what I think.
So schizophrenic.
I have to confer. We have a psychiatrist here. I have to tell him what schizophrenia means. And if all cases were the same, or maybe it's a spectrum, I don't want to say. You want to say something?
There would be a difference between mental illness that's severe, that there are treatments for, and a person who has a chronic mental illness could break through while they're taking their medications, so it's a matter of adjusting the medications, and then they can function well again.
Okay.
Unlike borderline personality disorder.
No medication.
There are no treatments that are FDA approved for
borderline. Are they FDA approved? Are they FDA unapproved or disapproved?
Nothing works.
Okay.
Every now and then there'll be
at the present time,
a few articles written about this kind of therapy or that kind of therapy.
So far, nothing works.
Right now, there's something going on, but it's going to fall by the wayside.
Okay, so there's your answer. Okay, so every case obviously is different. You have to ask big experts. Yes?
What if somebody's an alcoholic?
Oh, come on. Alcoholics, women are marrying alcoholic men every day that they know are alcoholic. They want Facebook or they want an alcohol. They marry them anyway.
But what if people have addictions, gambling addictions?
They marry them anyway. They marry them anyway. Doesn't matter if they don't know about it. Because their friend who does know about it is marrying them. So therefore you cannot say.
But that's presuming that a person is telling the truth before
she should have to. Okay, we'll get to that case in a minute. I have two more cases to discuss. Tonight we'll try to do both. At least do the first. And the second we'll at least try to begin. Source number three. Last week we mentioned that if someone is a homosexual, there may be grounds for nullifying their marriage. Okay? And they have a question. Misha Shotov v'mishkav Zachar is openly, actively homosexual. Still, Yochol Lasos Tshuva. He can repent. Umikol Makom Kidushei Tosein, as Rav Moshe wrote in his Tshuva. Why? So I quote two svaras from the Sridei Eish. I mentioned last time, Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, the Sridei Eish. He had two positions, two reasons. He was discussing a case of someone who was in the church. Number one, Af im chazeh b'tshuva. He left the church and davened in the shtibul. Mos hu b'yeneho. Any man who was part of the church for a period of time, any woman has any religious consciousness, he is most disgusting in her eyes. That's reason number one. Oh, second reason, the kol ba'eha lo yeshuvun. That's what we quoted Rashi in Avodah Zarah Yud Zayin. Once a person goes to the church, the chances of his coming back are next to nil. The achuz, the percentage, hametaknim es atzma, who were homosexual and become no longer homosexual, katan ma'od. It's a very small percentage. Okay? Let's go a little bit further. Uba avar pa machas. He did one homosexual act once in his life. Eino kiddushei tos. We assume that's not considered kiddushei tos. That's hapsak. Why? Because neither of these two reasonings apply. Eino mos. Why not? Because Yitzro the Zachar and a Chazak Yosim the Ishta. Rav Moshe's tshuva, when it comes to the situation if someone is homosexual, is that no woman would ever want to be with a man. This is, I'm giving you Rav Moshe's language. I have it written over here. No woman would ever want to be with such a man. I mean, if I give you the exact language that Rav Moshe had written, she would not want to be with such a man because this man is homosexual. Let me read it to you directly. It's on page 10 of this piece. Ibala bocher yosev mishkava ma'usa zeh. He prefers to be with men to rather than be with his wife. No woman would want to marry a man menuvel umos ubozui kozeh. Three adjectives. You can translate yourself. I don't want to say anything today. It's not politically correct. But that's what Rav Moshe writes. Okay? You can translate yourself. That would not apply to a fellow who has a strong Yetzirah for his wife, which is, thank God, healthy. And once he had a Mishigas. He wanted to see what the other side looked like. You know, not that all these people are talking about it. We'll try that flavor too. So this guy may not be so disgusting, whatever other word you want to use to translate, in her eyes. Number one. Number two. Yesh sikui tov ma'od sheyavzer b'tshuva. An expert psychologist told me that a man who just once experimented with homosexuality, very good chance of having a bechozer b'tshuva, live a perfectly normal life. So therefore, neither of the logical points that Rav Weinberg had with respect to someone in the church, which do apply to a person who's actively homosexual on a regular basis, neither applies to someone who just did it once, is a very important understanding. Having said this, we now turn to the very last paragraph of number four. The very last paragraph of number four, which we'll discuss today, and if we have time, we'll go back to the beginning of four, otherwise we'll have to do it next time. This case is brought to me by someone sitting in the room who has an organization called DIN. DIN. What does DIN stand for? Is it Rosh Tevis? What does DIN stand for? No? Whatever it is, it's a group which is trying to help women who are in difficult situations. Okay? So, two people in the room came to me, to my dining room table. I'll tell you exactly when it was. It was in the fall of 2004. We're talking about 9 years ago, and a tiny bit of change. They came with a couple and a woman. Now, I may have gotten some of my facts a little bit wrong. You'll correct me afterwards if my facts are not exactly right. But this is my general recollection all these years later. What happened? The woman married a, this young lady married a man. She was told, hey, he's a yeshiva bacha, one of the most distinguished Rosh Yeshivas of America. Traveled a long distance to do the wedding. Oh, and he's fine and dandy. Great. It's supposed to be this great yeshiva boy. Turns out, he has no desire to be with her. After, this is my recollection, about a year or so, the father sees something that's a little bit wrong. Says to his daughter, this doesn't look right. Maybe you should have a get. We don't have any children. That's what it is. We're not bonding enough. If you have a child, maybe that's going to cement the marriage. Let me say before anything else, don't ever believe that. Ever, ever, ever. Don't ever believe that. What they do, but he was hardly with her. No problem. Today's no problem. Artificial insemination from the husband, and she becomes pregnant. She becomes pregnant, he doesn't go near her. She has a baby, he doesn't go near her. She sees something that's really wrong, she made a big mistake. But a little bit, you know, naivete has almost no limit, but a little bit of seichel she had. Before asking for a get, she put a detective on him. I could have been a detective. This does not require Sherlock Holmes to figure this one out. The detective follows him straight into a gay bar. I think it was in Florida, if I'm not mistaken, my recollection is right now. In Florida. And they come with a pile of pictures this high from this detective. Today you can take pictures every millisecond. Now before I heard this case, I said, I can't discuss. I have to bring in Rabbi Reese, who was then a neighbor of ours, head of the Beis Din, the Menala. He sat with me. He's flipping through all these pictures. I say, I don't want to. In the Shamash and the Satavi Tahorahi, I didn't want to see any pictures. I said, Rabbi, you gotta You have no choice. You have to look at a picture. I look at one picture, only one picture. The picture is still in my mind. I said, my neshama is not as tahora as it was before that, but what can you do? Yeah, Hashem should forgive me. I had to try to help this lady. The picture has two men. We have such holy people in our audience. Whoever doesn't want to hear, please put your hands in your ears right now if you don't want to hear about it. There are two men stripped to the waist, there's a bathing suit or something like that, and there's some kind of funky dancing and this and that. I'm upset. What in the world they're trying to do? So I asked an innocent question. Who's the other guy? Oh, that's his partner. And what's the story with him? Yeah, they learned in yeshiva together. Another yeshiva guy, Hashem Yerachem. This is my recollection. If I'm very wrong on the fact, I'll find that after the shiur is over. But this is my recollection. So I say, was this behavior existent before the marriage? Any proof? Don't know. We just don't know. I say, you don't know. So if it's not a pre-existing condition, I can't help you. Nah, but we know he was this way from high school. So how do you know? Listen to this story now. After the couple split up, we got a call from a relative. And the relative said, they split up. I know why they split up. Why they split up? He's gay. How did you know? Come on. I went to high school with him. We all knew it was obvious from his old behavior that that's the way he was. So why didn't you call us up when they got engaged? The response is astounding. We didn't want to break up a shidduch. I want to cry when I say it. I want to cry. People are such tzaddikim all of a sudden. The Chofetz Chaim's picture is right in front of them. Look and save the Chofetz Chaim. If you wish, we'll speak about this next time. This is a little bit, I mean, it's part of our topic, but if you wish, you'll let me know. In 2 weeks we'll meet again. You're not allowed to be quiet. By being quiet, you're in violation of one of the negative commandments in our holy Torah. Lo samar al dam reyecha. Do not stand idly by when your friend is drowning. That's exactly what this person did. He knew it was a problem. He said nothing. Okay. So, now we have a case. We have a witness who says that everyone knew, if we bring his whole class to testify, that they all knew there was something wrong with this guy, or so they thought, from his behavior in high school. We have pictures now of this behavior. Let's put the two and two together. I said, but I cannot even attempt to rule this marriage as null and void based on his aberrant behavior before the wedding. We don't know if he did anything before the wedding. They have tendencies, but he didn't do anything before the wedding. So now, perhaps, we don't know. So what does it hinge on? On a very important topic which we spoke about earlier today. Given his tendencies at age 16, can we say categorically that such a man cannot have a healthy relationship with a woman later on in life? If we can say that, we have a case. We'll try it. A case. True, he didn't do anything bad, so therefore we cannot disqualify him and say the marriage is no good because of his aberrant behavior. He didn't do anything bad. But since he could not establish a normal relationship with a woman, given his orientation, then we can argue he's not impotent, as I spoke about last week, so he can't physically be with a woman, but based on his orientation, he can't help himself, and therefore perhaps we should suggest that the marriage is null and void. That's the case that I was trying to make. Okay. So, yes.
If you just said that until he got married, we don't know that he engaged in any sinful activity.
Correct, absolutely correct.
Then a person, you also said, al tamo al dam reyecha, I would feel bad about saying to somebody, call them up and say, you know, all his friends and from high school and myself included, we think this guy is gay. Not based on anything that he did, but we get that feeling. That's wrong.
That's right. It's not wrong.
Right?
It's right. Let them check it out, and make their let them make their own informed decision.
No, that's not fair. If you know something,
with all respect,
this guy looks gay to me. So what does that mean?
This is a case where there are camp counselors, there are yeshiva mashgichim who are there. It's a question of, are they going to come to
if something
to
happened that they know about that shows this
but
to be true, but just
no,
because
no,
it's
no,
like,
no,
if he talks funny or if he has a limp wrist,
they're going to catch him in the act. They're going to catch him in the act.
If he can't, right.
Slow. Let me just get.
This guy looks like a crook. I should say that to somebody. I think he looked like a crook.
Okay, so again. The details you'll have to discuss with the people who know the details, or who may remember them. I don't remember all the details at all. But you're right. If it's based on someone's pure speculation, you're 100% right. But if it's based on more than that, you have to be careful. Let me go on. So, how do I know exactly when this happened? So they came to me, and I said, you have to come to me now, because I'm going to Eretz Yisrael this week. They came to me on a particular day, and I know exactly where I went, because I went for a particular simcha. It was in the fall of 2004, and I left on a Thursday. I think they came to Madrid Sunday that week, maybe the day before that, and I landed on Friday in the Holy Land, and I have to make my case. I have only one really go-to person to go to with all my concerns. His name is Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg. He is, by me, the Gadol. He's Rav Shlomo Zalman's son-in-law. He, by me, what he says goes. And if he says no, it's also no-go. So you have to, otherwise, if you know, I'm not using him, I'm listening to him. Good. My first call when I landed was to try to speak to someone who's an expert in the field. Before you have to speak to someone in this field, before you can go to the rabbi, he presented this fact. So I called my classmate. I'm mentioning his name only because I don't think he's changed his mind, so you'll ask him yourself. His name is David Ribner. He's a classmate of mine. He lives in Harnof, and he specializes in these kind of things. So I called him. I had this, given these facts, was there a chance that this man could lead a normal physical relationship with a woman. He says to me, no. He didn't have to act on his instincts. He could be celibate, whatever. But to establish a normal husband-wife relationship physically, impossible. Okay. Said it to me. So I have a case. This is Friday. I call up quickly through Rabbi Goldberg. Can I see him tomorrow night? Yeah. I come Motzei Shabbos to his house. I tell him this tale of woe. What's the tale of woe? Then he's going to get. What's the problem? Again, he'll give. But you got to be able to afford it. Okay. So Rabbi Goldberg listens to me very carefully and says, please do some more homework. Please do some more homework. Ask somebody else. I can't just say, rule that a marriage is no marriage because one person said, it cannot happen. Who said that person is correct? Okay. So, the next day, who else am I going to call? I have another expert in the field who lives in Yerushalayim. Her name, I'll give her name too. You can ask her. Her name is Dr. Anna Rubel. I don't know if you ever heard of her. Someone I know quite well from spent summers together in camp. Her husband is Rabbi Mori Rubel. Many may know him from various yeshivas he taught in. She says to me, of course he could change. What kind of question is that? It's not easy, but of course he could change. And they both are experts in this field. They're both specialists in this very field. What do you do when you have two people? Achayavu akosav ashlishi v'yachriya b'nehem. When I'm in Israel, I usually visit a cousin of mine. His name is David Konigsberg. He's married to Ruthie Willick. And he's in the mental health field. And he knows all the people. He knows everybody here. I told him my whole story. So what do I do? Dr. Ribner says this. Dr. Rubel says this. What's the story? Let me give you my opinion, he says. Dr. Ribner is telling you the orthodoxy of the mental health profession. Can't blame him. That's what is being taught, that you can't change, it's impossible. That's what he's telling you. What Dr. Rubel is telling you is probably close to the truth. But you know what? Don't listen to me. I don't have so much experience in the field. Go just a few blocks down from where he lives in Yerushalayim is Machon Pua, and go to a man named Rav Menachem Burstein, the head of Machon Pua. I know he's dealt with this. Good. Went down the block. Lucky Rav Burstein was there. He's a friend of mine from going back a long time. I told him this. Bivadai, we speak in Hebrew. Bivadai. people who have these tendencies not only can change, but they do change. I've done it myself, but you want to speak to a person who's done it more than me, call a man named, I'll give his official title, Harav Dr. Mordechai Halperin. He's a very famous individual in the Yerushalayim again. He's written many, many articles, and he's done many good things, both in the combining his rabbinical scholarship with his medical scholarship. He does it. Ooh, here's his phone number. Here's his telephone. Call him. So I call him. Bavadai. I said, come on, but what percentage? What's your success rate? He says, look, people don't come to me unless they're really, really committed. Or they don't come to me. Of those who come to me really committed, this is what he told me, my success rate is between 85 and 90%. So he tells him, man is Erech HaNemem B'Yisurin.
All this stuff has been debunked already in the last.
Yes. Yeah. Be debunked by the same people who agree with Dr. Rivner. Okay, I know who debunked it. You're not adding anything. Trey Kameya. Yeah. You're not adding anything. Okay, good. So, given this fact, assuming it's a fact, or at least have to be, maybe it's a fact, I could not help this individual. At the end of the day, they paid a small fortune in order to procure the get. I tried, I made my case, went to the Rabbanim, I gathered facts as best I could do it. Maybe I was given facts which some people in this room think are wrong. They're certainly entitled to their opinion. If they want to go to a different rabbi with different facts and get a different psak, they're also entitled. But the question will be, if the facts prove to be incorrect, you'll end up with a problem that we have right now. So it's not good to annul marriages unless the your facts are completely clear. Okay.
P.S. was happy ending.
What?
P.S. was happy ending. She got married.
Oh yeah, Brocha, I didn't even know that. Thank God. I'm happy for the happy ending. Now, let's at least begin. I don't want to go too late. Let's at least begin source number 4. Maybe I'll just begin it. I'll give you homework to for next time. We'll try to finish it if we can. Bishnas Tovshin Samach Gimel. Donu HaPosnim BeBulgeres Beis Yaakov. A Beis Yaakov alum. Shenisa Zabachu Yeshiva. Amanash Yilma BeKoilel. Oh, let me learn in Koilel. What could be better? What's the matter? Holy, holy. Kodosh, Kodosh. Nimtza Shayaroe Zonos Lifnei HaKidushin. Which is prostitutes before the marriage. V'himshich b'chet li'ach ha'sheneso. And he continued to be with prostitutes after the marriage. So there was an attempt to decide that the marriage was no marriage. Kiddush etos. But below kavu the kiddush etos, and the rabbis did not come to that conclusion at the end. After Hoya Mizana Oblial, he was a bad guy, it was promiscuous. Why? Because you cannot allow the woman to marry without a get. This woman would not stand for it. But once again, and this we know very, very well, very well. In the highest circles of our American society, and even parts of Jewish society, V'yesh the Misratzes. There are women who their man, their husband is adulterous, and they take him back. I don't have to make any specific references. Vishuv Ein Anan Sade. There's no longer this Anan Sade that we are witnesses. Everyone, no one would ever stay in such a marriage, would want to marry such a man. It's just not true. Factually, it's not true. There are women who are marrying men whom they know are promiscuous before the marriage, and they know they that way after the marriage, they stay with them. Unfortunately, that's a reality. It is an absolute reality. I know cases, can't say no.
but can't you say that she's a woman who wants to marry a kohel person? Among women like that, nobody would.
I wish you were right, but you're not right there either. No. Even among those who are marrying kohel men, there are people who are staying. And besides that fact, it's very difficult to draw this distinction of one woman and another woman. Rav Moshe was insistent that there'd be an Anan Sade that across the board no one would want it. Well, they all got the kolos. There's heavy kolos and there's light kolos. I don't have to tell you about kolos. The word kolos means a lot of things these days. We have kolos Yom Rishon. He's a kolik. Goes to kolos Yom Rishon. So, you know, whatever. Let's not go into that right now. I'm going to end in a minute, but let me just read the first line of the next paragraph, and, which has happened in this shul. Sometimes there's a lot of interesting things happening in here. Ve'yesh shetzirfu snif. There were some rabbis who wrote on this topic. The bizman hazeh yesh machlas aids. Ve'yesh sakon al isha. AIDS can the woman could die from AIDS if her partner has AIDS. V'chazaka, it's an assumption. Shelaka, this fellow either has it, or sheyilke, or will get it. Ayadei harbe maiseis nus, to his incessant promiscuity. And then, if he has AIDS, it's in a killer. It's an isa yichal, like a mukha shchin, we spoke about that the first time. And she never would have married him. Let me tell you what happened in this case. There's a yid at tzaddik. A tzaddik is sod ol. I'll say his name. His name is Beresh Fuchs. I don't know if any of you heard of him. His involvement in this parasha started with this particular case. I'm chutin the whole story. It's even related now to Riverdale. I don't want to go into any details. He said we have to stop the scourge of extortion. We have to undo the marriage. He commissioned the rabbanim throughout the world to find a way to undo the marriage. With letters written in America, in Eretz Yisrael, every rabbi was weighing in to try to say, but the more responsible rabbis among them said, it's not so simple. And they wrote letters, and I got copies of these letters, back and forth. I have old correspondence on this issue. And they came and said, your AIDS point is just wrong. So we had a meeting upstairs right here in the shul. It involved two very distinguished dayanim, one from Muncie, one from Yerushalayim. Boy, he's originally American too. Myself, and there was a fourth person in the room. I'll tell you his name too. His name was Dr. Aaron Glatt, a Talmud of mine. He's a Rav. He's in Woodmere. He's an infectious disease is his specialty. He's an infectious disease man. I said, what's going on with this story? Can we, in fact, annul a marriage on the supposition that he got it, will get it, and he may kill her, etc., etc.? So let me just read the end of this paragraph, then we'll stop. Rofe Mumcha Shamati, that's him. Shasikui sheish yidabek meisha, that a man will catch it from a woman in his promiscuity, pachos me echad me elef b'chomais is nus. That's the one in the thousand from each act. And even if he got it, hasikui sheish tot yidabek, that she'll get it from him, is less than 1 in 250 in every act that they're being together. Moreover, Dashu bo rabbi, people doing this all the time. That's what he's dealing with. Maybe some of Hashem. Women are now marrying men who have AIDS. They know it up front. They're marrying them anyway. And more than that, in yikach trufos, if he takes the proper prophylactic medicines, kimat iefshar shetidabek mimenu, almost impossible that she'll get it from him. And then they can use a condom. So the AIDS point to me didn't carry the day. This didn't carry it based on this conversation. What's left is the following, which I will postpone till next time. People can just try to read the next four paragraphs. There are some who claim that we should equate this heterosexual promiscuity with homosexuality. As we shall see next time, I don't believe it's a proper equation at all. The question is, can he change his behavior? I think the answer to that question is also yes. That will be the remaining three paragraphs. The last paragraph is just to finish up from what we spoke about this week. Uvuvda shenoda shelabacher netia lemishkav zachah bebachruso, aval lo yadua shechata bepol achak kiddushin. Lefi amumchim, rov me'elu sherotzim mishtadim nishtanas bistadrim imabli tipul v'im kain iav shalivso kiddushet tos the toli bebechira. That's what I wrote. That's based on what I was told. There's those who disagree with me, and I'm just giving what I was told. I don't have time to read the next three paragraphs. Believe that we will. But I have to ask you a question. Would you prefer that next week we continue and talk about these issues of disclosure or failure to disclose?
Yes,
or, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll just talk about that next time. After we get to that, we'll have to come back to other solutions to the Aguna problem. Shavua Tov.
What was this conversation?
When was it? It was in that year. It was in Tavshin Sam of Gimel, presumably. I have that's 2003. I should add, that story ended yeah. with a get being given, paid for, I believe, by Mr. Fuchs, for the more money that has ever been paid to a man since Har Sinai. I'm told between $2 and $3 million.
So the get was given because it was extorted.
Extorted? It was get, okay. Shavua Tov.